It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch. I want to tell you, Kavanaugh. You have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Sandy Rios with you. That was probably one of the most stunning events of this week. That is Chuck Schumer on the steps of the Supreme Court, and he's the minority leader in the Senate, threatening two Supreme Court justices who are in the process of hearing an abortion case. They're just hearing it. They've made no comments. They haven't done anything. And Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, the heir apparent, the leader of the party, really, certainly in the Senate of the Democratic Party, is threatening, very threatening, to these two justices. In my lifetime, I've never heard or seen anything like it. And that's the reason why many people were astounded by it, even Jeffrey Toobin. Said, it sounds like a physical threat. Yeah, I guess it did. You won't know what hit you. And so, of course, Chuck Schumer backpedaled and said, oh, he was talking about the Republicans, but he couldn't possibly have been talking about the Republicans. He was calling out those two justices by name. You know, in our country, we have always, maybe you don't know this, but federal judges and judges in general have been protected in with very strong laws. You are not allowed to threaten them because you can imagine as they pass judgments on people, whether it's the mob or criminals or people that are just angry, their lives are in greater danger. And through the years, there have been pipe bombs and just killing of judges. You hear about that in Mexico now, where judges who have, you know, decided against cartels are beheaded. Well, that's what we don't want in this country. And so Chuck Schumer, that was an unbelievable thing that he did. And yet, you know, crickets from a lot of senators, just crickets, but not from Josh Hawley and 14 other senators who are asking for a resolution that would censure Chuck Schumer for his remarks. At the very least, can they not do this? And so we are asking you to help Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley and the others by urging a censure from your own senator. You can do that, by the way, by just calling them. And I think next week, they'll be on recess, but Friday, they're still in town in the morning, I think, maybe. They leave as soon as they can. But you can call their home offices and tell them they should censure Schumer. For heaven's sake, what is the matter with you? Do you want lawlessness in our courts? Do you want judges to be threatened? Do you want your own lives to be threatened? Do you think you're not safe if you don't protect the lives of justices? And so that's what we are asking you to do. AFA is asking you to do that. We have an action alert on that. And if you have not signed up for our action alerts, go to afaaction.net and sign up. And that will make it easier for you to respond in that way. But you don't have to do that to make a call to your senator and tell them to censure Chuck Schumer for his threats against Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch. And speaking of disorder in the court, something really unprecedented, something else happened this week. A federal judge, it's Judge Lynn Adelman of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, blasted Chief Justice Roberts and the rest of the court. And he's putting it in an article called The Roberts Court's Assault on Democracy, which is set to be published by Harvard Law and Policy Review. And by the way, this is unprecedented also. And as soon as I tell you what he writes, you'll get this. But because we're not all attorneys, we don't all know that they have an ethics canon. Judges certainly do, and they are held to account if they step outside the conduct that's laid out in that canon. And many, many attorneys and judges now are weighing in on this and saying that it broke several codes of that canon. So I'm sure you will hear more about that as this develops. Maybe if they don't stop talking about coronavirus 24/7, you might hear about something like, you know, a threat on the Supreme Court. But I'll tell you that Judge Lynn Edelman wrote this: the Roberts Court has been anything but passive. By the way, Edelman was appointed to the bench by President Bill Clinton. And he goes on to say, rather, the courts, meaning the Supreme Court under Roberts, has been anything but passive. The court's hard right majority is actively participating in undermining American democracy. Indeed, the Roberts Court has contributed to ensuring that the political system in the United States pays little attention to ordinary Americans and responds only to the wishes of a relatively small number of powerful corporations and individuals. What does that sound like? Sounds like a Bernie Sanders judge or a Bill Clinton judge or a Barack Obama judge who is a socialist who holds the party line. It's us against them. It's big money. It's power. It's 1%. Ironically, of course, a big power and big money, the tech companies and lots of big corporations, most of them now actually, are on the left. But that's beside the point. That would be a fact that would be inconvenient to Judge Lynn Edelman's narrative here. And again, this is a federal judge in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. This is amazing. He goes on to say, he points out voting rights. He actually calls the Republican senators who have voted in about Obamacare, he calls them compares them to pro-slavery Southerners, because he goes on to weave in Republican senators as well as members of the court. But his chief ire is against Justice Roberts and the members of the court. He says they've weaponized the First Amendment. He said they've thwarted Congress on efforts to address one of the most serious problems that the poor face, the lack of health insurance. So this is a judge who's not supposed to have an opinion. And I remember a good friend of mine a number of years ago was a young law student when I first met him, and he ended up being promoted till he was chief judge in a very large court, which I won't mention. But one of the things that he said to me was I had to put my opinions, especially my political opinions, on the back burner. I can't talk about them. I can't have opinions anymore. I can't be a judge and have public opinions. But that's gone by the wayside. You can see that the Supreme Court justices themselves have, Sotomayor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they've all been speaking out and expressing their opinions quite freely. And it has become, this is not the norm, I'm just saying. And that's why this article is called Disorder in the Courts. This federal judge continues by saying, a new and arguably dangerous phase, this is, in American history, and requires fixing and necessitates every bit of democratic resourcefulness that we can muster to undo the damage that the court has already caused. Well, you can imagine how John Roberts is going to be flipping out about this. You know, he was trying to play nice with the left, and it's not working out very well for him. And so we'll see what happens with that one. And by the way, speaking of the courts, the Supreme Court just this week sided with the Trump administration yet again. And boy, that's new. It's different. It said that the Trump administration may continue its Remain in Mexico policy for asylum seekers while lower court challenges continue. So the federal government is saying that the Supreme Court must weigh in on this because this is a policy that's been working. It's kept our borders from being flooded. And yet a lower court justice, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, had ordered the policy be suspended. And so the Supreme Court reversed that. And that's the kind of decision that judge is upset about. Many, many, many other things. But that's what's happening with that. And by the way, this weekend, the FISA statute is going to expire. Now, what is that? That's the federal, it's the surveillance program that set up the FISA court, set up surveillance of American citizens who were suspected of terrorism. It was a way to get around many of our privacy laws, like the Fourth Amendment and others. When 9/11 happened and earlier than that, when terrorist attacks were happening, it was a way to give our law enforcement tools so that they could stop terrorism in this country. And many, many argued that it was necessary to sort of loosen the protections for American citizens. But, of course, we saw what happened with President Trump, with the surveilling of Carter Page and the Trump administration and people working around him with, Lieutenant General Flynn and others. We saw what happened with the FISA court. We saw what happened with Peter Strzok and them changing wording and presenting false evidence to the FISA court, the FBI. It's just amazing how it has been abused. And so there's been a lot of discussion about this and a lot of back and forth. The House this week passed a FISA bill. They worked with the Attorney General Barr, who seems to be happy with what they came up with. There's a very big difference of opinion on FISA and whether it should have been reauthorized at all. But that's happening this weekend. It expires this weekend, and so we'll see what happens. Now, the coronavirus, of course, has been the talk of the town, shall we say, the talk of the country, the talk of the world. No one can talk about anything else. And I told you yesterday that there was a good effect, I think is going to be a good effect on this, and that is just discovering that China is producing most of our antibiotic, a lot of our pain relievers. I mean, I'm talking like in the 70% range for antibiotics, and the other 30% other places. I don't think we're producing hardly anything here as of 2004. Just disgraceful. And so as a result of this, and the fact that China's not exactly friendly to us, they are our chief threat, really, on the globe, because we built them up so much financially, because we sent them all of our factories, most of them, all of our manufacturing, because we outsourced so much of American production to China. We've made them rich, and now they're using their putting their money to good fashion, building up their military, and now threatening us. And now they are in the position where they are producing our drugs. And so they even threatened, there was a paper last week where China actually threatened what would happen if they stopped letting us have our drugs that we so desperately need in this country. And so the president is getting ready to sign an executive order to start. I don't exactly know what the order is going to say, but the whole idea is to get production back here on our soil, not only of pills and medications, but also of masks and of just the other goods and services that we've come to rely on China. That means the prices are going to go up. We're going to have to pay higher prices for things in order to be safe, in order for people in this country to have jobs, in order for the country to continue to prosper. We may have to do with less stuff. We may have to consume less goods. And I just want to prepare you for that. I'm willing to do that. I know it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard on me, too, because I love buying stuff. I love to go to Walmart, which has almost everything bought in China, almost everything we order is from China. We may have to stop ordering less and settle for less in order to make our country safe again. So that's one side effect of the coronavirus. But there's another one that I read about. You know, the markets have been going crazy. And you know that earlier in the week, oil prices plummeted. But the stock market plummeted also because a war broke out, a price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia. And all because the coronavirus caused the demand for flights, flying, people traveling, the demand on oil to plummet. And so there's such a glut of oil right now and no need for it that the Saudis wanted the Russians to agree, which is what part of what OPEC does. They try to control prices. And Russia has been, at least on the outside of OPEC, attending their meetings and allegedly working with them. So the Saudis asked them to do their part and to lower their prices to keep the market stable and the price stable. And the Russians refused to do that. So let me just say that Saudi, this is what a senior advisor to the royal family, Saudi royal family, told Con Coughlin, who wrote an article for Gatestone Institute. That's what I'm reading it from. The oil price war is going to be a game changer for the Middle East. The Russians rely on their oil reserves to fund their military activities in Syria. But if the oil revenues collapse, then they will no longer be able to afford these long and costly wars. And so I think it was a bit of a shock to Russia. They weren't going to see that coming. And so Russia's influence in the Middle East is going to be threatened by the fact that they're not going to be able to have the profits from their oil that they've been enjoying. So that's one good effect from this, and just thought you could use some good effect from it. All right, so coming up next, an interesting discussion about what makes women support Donald Trump. Why do they support him, and why do some women hate him so much? What kind of women are these? There was a study done, a research project. You'll want to hear about this. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And I think that's why you're seeing this enormous divide, particularly with women who feel that he disrespects women. He disrespects the speaker. But and then, you know, as we saw the other night at the State of the Union, repeatedly lies about the situation for women in this country after he's tried to take away maternity benefits. He's tried to repeal protection for pre-existing conditions. So many things that women face every day. And I think that's also why you're seeing women so motivated right now to be involved in politics and voting. One of the stories that I think has been underreported out of the Iowa, I know it's been a long story on Iowa, but 58% of caucus goers in Iowa were women.
Yes. Yeah.
And they don't make it easy for women to participate in the caucus system. So if you look at that, you look at who's showing up to vote, who's showing up to block walk, phone bank. That's what we're seeing at supermajority. If 58% of the voters next fall are women, mm-hmm. it's game over. When I talk to women, listen to women around the country, they're dealing with childcare costs that are often mm-hmm. higher than college tuition, equal pay that we're not making really any progress on, the fear of losing access to health care, which is a women's issue, pre-existing conditions, a women's issue. I feel like women feel like they are unseen and unheard in this administration. And as you say, overwhelmingly oppose this president. I think 59% of women in the last CNN poll last week wanted him impeached. And these are women that are highly motivated to be involved and to vote next fall.
That was Cecile Richards, the former president of Planned Parenthood, opining about how much women hate President Trump. We hear that all the time, don't we? We hear it about from Hollywood actresses. We hear it from anchors at various networks because of the this is what we're told, because of the president's past behavior with women. Because of his boastful braggadociousness, because he's a liar, because he's you fill in the blank, and all the things that Cecile said, women dislike Trump. Is that right? Well, the interesting dynamic is that not all women do hate Trump. Some actually really embrace and support him firmly. They're called Women for Trump in some quarters, but they are turning out in record numbers at these various rallies that President Trump is having. And recently in New Hampshire, of all places, there are thousands of people showed up to a Trump rally. And guess what? Many of them were women. And so at that rally was a group known as Center for the New American Frontier. They're a research company. And they actually pulled some of the women apart from the crowd and did a survey with them. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Why in the world would women support Trump? Do they support Trump? And why in the world do they do that? And to talk to us today is Ann Siegel. Ann is a researcher for Frontier Center. She's been researching for a long time. And I'm anxious to talk to her about this. Ann, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Ann, how would you describe, I kind of tried to describe it, how would you describe what Frontier Center actually does?
We try to go out into the frontiers of research, so we aren't going to accept polling as gospel when it comes to understanding the mind of the American woman in this case. So we want to go out there and get our hands dirty by talking to people, and that's something that's missing in research right now, in market research. We stand, you know, at a distance from our subjects, and so we go and we talk in depth with women about, in this case, how they feel about the president.
So have you done this before?
Yes. So this is a follow-up to a study we had done in 2016 when the first phenomenon of the female Trump supporter started to percolate out. And we identified in 2016 at sort of the height of all the hubbub around how women were falling away from the president at the time, the candidacy of President Trump. And we looked at why there was still this very strong and loyal contingent then. And then now we've been able to contrast that 4 years later and see what's changed.
All right. So the idea then was to go out to, of all places, why did you choose New Hampshire?
Well, this was a matter of looking at somewhere where women had in particular were being said to be not supportive of the president. So it's an East Coast place. Let's look at who is turning out to a rally, because people who are turning out to a rally are going to be some of the most high-intensity supporters. And one of the ways we are able to get insights about how people feel is looking at that really strong opinion and then seeing how that might flow through people who have a lesser attachment to the president. So we look at the strongest ones, people who are at the rally. We talk to them for, you know, about half an hour each. And we found some really interesting changes from 2016 about these women's relationship to the president. In 2016, they told us that they agreed with what the president was saying, but they were a little bit cautious about whether or not they could trust him. So they were looking in 2016 for signals that the president was dependable. They said, in particular, his family, the way his children had turned out, made them feel as though they could trust that the president was doing something right. And so they would sort of dip their toe in there and start supporting him because he was saying everything that sounded right. And because of that, when they were proven right when he was elected, these women who supported him in 2016 said they felt a sense of empowerment, that they had never been able to be so right before because they had gone against a community of women who were not supporting him. They had gone against the elites and the media. Everyone told them they were wrong. And then when they were proven right, there was this wonderful story of female empowerment. And they now felt as though they could enter more fully into the political dialogue as women. Well, in 2020, they said to us at this rally in New Hampshire that they had changed from looking for signals they could trust the president to now looking for a leader to bring them into the culture to understand how they should relate to the culture that is against them. They feel ostracized, and they want to know, how should we act in this situation? And the president is leading them through that thorny situation, and they are emulating him. They're emulating the first lady. They mentioned her. And they're looking for his toughness to inspire them to be tough.
That was interesting to me as I read your survey. That was kind of a recurring theme of the statements that they were learning from President Trump how to fight back. Whereas may I see if I got this right? In 2016, they were more timid, a little less bold. And 2020, they were much more bold and confident.
They're emboldened. They we termed it, they're adopting his bravery for themselves. And that feels exhilarating. They said, I'm exhilarated by this. I'm empowered. I'm ready to go fight for these causes I believe in. Other things that he's doing that make them so positive about him is they said he's identifying new facets of Americanism. So what that means is there were these tensions out there that weren't quite articulated in the right way for these women. So, for example, they are for the military. They have family in the military. They have they just support it as an institution, but they weren't interested in having so many foreign entanglements, and that had never been sort of brought together in a neat package for them. So they said that that's something that President Trump was doing. He was articulating clearly how they feel about their political choices in a way that no one has done before, and because that, again, they have that guidance, that leadership, to bring them into the empowerment of in the political fray. So they're ready to fight.
And let me ask you something.
He has wise judgment, and that's very soothing to them. It's just a good example of a leader really relating to his constituents.
You targeted women who were 25 to 45, and you categorized them. You already said this word, but it's an actual category, high-intensity voters. How in the world did you figure out which women were high-intensity supporters of President Trump?
Well, it was a simple set of questions. So how strongly do you support him today? Do you intend to vote for him? Do you have positive or negative opinions? So they were screened according to those variables, including their intent to vote. And so we allowed for people who had changed their minds also. So we allowed for people to participate in the study who may not have supported him in 2016. And that is also a phenomenon that people are who had been on the fence, so they hadn't engaged as an early adopter, female supporter. They hadn't found those signals that they could trust him in 2016. They have now been confirmed that they can. So there's no question in their mind that he is going to deliver on the policies they want. And Another really interesting aspect is that they said he visibly associates with shunned causes and people.
Yeah, so, talk about that. What yeah. shunned, he, meaning President Trump, affiliates willingly with shunned causes and people. Did you get yes. into any examples of that? Did they say what they were talking about?
The most commonly cited example was that attendance at the pro-life rally. You know, really couldn't get more shunned in terms of the mainstream culture to be associated with pro-life causes. And his example there was a moment for these women where they said he is willing to put himself out there. And the important thing I think to note here is that they associate themselves as a shunned person. So that is a sample of how he will relate not only to causes that are important to them, like the pro-life cause, but also to them personally. So this is a group of people who know they are not welcome in the mainstream culture, and that is part of what's driving their connection to him, and they're looking now for signals that he will continue to align with those causes that are not acceptable.
And this is outside of your study, and you may not be prepared to answer this question. I'm not. Do you, you know, when you go to a rally like that, I would say close to 50% attending are probably women. Would you say that's true? I mean, do you remember looking at the crowd? Yeah. You must have thought in that way because you were looking for women.
But perhaps more than 50%, at least at this New Hampshire rally. It was overwhelmingly, and they're vocal, and they're proud, and they're excited to be there. So, yeah, the women, it's the hidden story, really, that we have failed, our media has failed to tell us, and that's why we love you, Sandy, for going out and finding these stories. We don't hear that this is a phenomenon, and it is. And we actually ran a poll last week that's going to be published at the Frontier Center soon, and that showed that right now among what we are calling attainable women, so for the conservative side, so that's people who are identifying as conservative, moderate-leaning right, independent-leaning right, or libertarian, 54% support President Trump. So it's a little bit over half. And so this is the story of that 50% of the right-leaning women who are strong supporters.
That's interesting. Now, to be clear, that's obtainable. So in other words, you're not looking, your sample did not include registered Democrats, I don't think.
No.
Or people that are like Hollywood starlets.
They actually could be a registered Democrat as long as they're saying their ideology is conservative, which, believe it or not, does happen. That so this would be considered attainable, though, if they're identifying their ideology as conservative. We want to talk to them. We want to understand them. That's part of our mission, is to bring people together under these American principles. And so something like a party affiliation these days isn't always indicative of your policy position or your real principles.
Right. Actually, I know when you do these kinds of things, you have to categorize. It's everybody is so distinct and different, but you have to create categories. And so you did, and you identified four distinct values. Now, you've already touched on some of those, but what you give the broad term community. What did that mean to the people who you talked to, and what were you trying to say there? What's that value mean, other than the obvious?
They feel that he is supporting, through the causes and policies and words he chooses, they believe he is supporting the causes that are important to their community and that will support and strengthen their community. So their friends, their family in particular, this again came back to the military, that his support for the military, the police, a lot of them talked about how these are the occupations of their community, and he is supporting those. And then that he is supporting the principles that they hold dear. So that is supportive of their community. And then we have this value that is running throughout all of our studies that we're running right now, which is peace of mind. And that's actually how women are terming it. That's exactly how they spoke it to us. They say that term, peace of mind. They are confirmed that he has wise judgment. They, in particular, noted that Melania's example is something they're noting. They're noting that the media is not covering her always in the most positive light. And they see that she is nevertheless, they said, representing the U.S. with grace and at the same time ignoring that media. The fact that she is aligned with him gives them peace of mind. So they're looking at his Twitter usage, which we hear so much negativity about. And we actually just did a study with women who are on the right and extremely negative about the president. They're also saying the flip side of Twitter usage. But in this case, they're saying this is an example of him being accessible, listening, speaking his mind, and they know his authentic self. They may not always agree with everything, but what's more important is that he's being authentic, which relieves them that they aren't being fooled. And
And hold on just one second, because we have to take a break. But when we come back, there's so many more things. And also, you got so many interesting individual comments. I want to ask you about maybe about the women that you interviewed and if there was a type or if there was not a type. It'd be interesting to know that, too. That's not in your study, I know, but it's interesting. It's women at who support President Trump very strongly. Who are they? What are they like? Ann Segal is my guest, and we'll be back in a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I hate identity politics, so that's why it's really weird for me, on the other hand, to say we did recognize the Republican Party and just people like myself who love and support the president that there clearly seemed to be a disconnect or a problem with women voters.
I support President Trump because he's a lot of things. He's patriotic, he's pro-life. All these issues are very important to me. I don't see anything on the Democratic side, anyone on the Democratic side, who shares my values.
I really like his honesty. I'm one of these people that I also say what I mean, and I mean what I say, and sometimes I don't always, not always politically correct. I think the women are very strong in their own businesses, in their own communities. We are mothers, we are housewives, we are the team moms, we own businesses, you know, we are on the school boards, and I think we have a strong voice in what we want and what we'd like to see in our community.
When we first thought about doing this, we were hoping we would get, you know, 15 to 20 women that would show up at a lunch. And instead, we can't find venues big enough. Tomorrow, we're going to be at a place with 88 women. It is a phenomenon, and it's the president. And it's because these women are excited, and they feel hopeful. You know, I mean, look, we're standing at a country club. What person doesn't want to be able to have a membership here and go out and swim with their kids or go golf? You know, this is American exceptionalism is what we're looking at. And I think these people feel like I have a chance at that again, and my kids might graduate and be able to stay in Michigan and get a good job. And they want to do more. They want to do something else. And so we're trying to give them a way to do something else.
That's Women for Trump in Michigan. Interesting, isn't it? And so Ann Segal is my guest. She is with Frontier, Center for the New American Frontier. And they went to New Hampshire to a Trump rally, and they spent quite a bit of time spending 30 minutes, actually, with just about 30 minutes with every single woman that they interviewed. And they found out that Women for Trump have a reason why they support Trump the way they do. And as you listen to those statements by those women in Michigan, did any of that sound like some of the conversations you had in New Hampshire?
Oh, it couldn't have been more closely matched. And that last comment about American exceptionalism, that really comes through. This is not just about a one-off president. This is about what is America still. And Trump is that leader for them, defining it. It's counter to all the wisdom you might hear on Fox News or something like that. They are saying that this is the American future. This pushing back against the PC culture that ostracizes the good from their point of view. They are looking to improvements in the American institutions through the president. They are looking for will their children experience the American dream. And so he's in the midst of it. They're saying he's in the fray. It's not a done deal about what America's future is, and this is what needs to happen right now. He is the man for the moment, and he is the model for how I am going to act. I am not going to be reticent and I'm not going to be passive. I'm going to stand up and be the defender of my values and my country.
And so there's
one
of the things I noticed, this, I love this actually, because I like women to be smart. I kind of have a thing for smart women. I do. Sometimes women talk from their emotions and they leave their intellect behind. One of the things that struck me here is you got some really very informed responses, at least based on what I looked at here. Women were talking about policies, like financial policies, lowering taxes. They talked about trade agreements, all that kind of stuff. And that seemed to me quite a contrast between at least my perception of women on the left who repeat sound bites. They talk about, you know, the tape that President Trump was caught on, you know, talking derogatorily about women. They will repeat the same things over and over again, but they don't really talk about policy. Am I overstating the intellect of the women that you interviewed, or is that accurate?
This is exactly what we're tracking at the Frontier Center, which is that this is the most underreported story. Engagement with President Trump and the what has accompanied that, which is a newfound confidence to look at the political scene and those and what's happening there and become empowered, has resulted in these women who are remarkably well informed about what is happening. As you mentioned it, I mean, they're talking about renegotiated trade agreements, pro or against, and what that means for them. All the increased military funding. This, as I said before, they have a nuanced view about policy that had not been well addressed by Republican figures in the past. So they're saying that he is now resolving those tensions that, in their opinion, about policy, that no one had done that before, so that they had to have an opinion about it to begin with. So that's really this women's empowerment through their relationship to Trump is an underreported story, an unreported story. And yet they do have a wonderful level of knowledge about policy, but also about where America is headed. Like, they are interested in what the alternatives are for America right now. Is it that it's not just a candidacy or an election, but it's in America's Americanism that is changing. And so they view this as a moment for battle. And they use language that is very couched in those terms. They are ready to fight. They're not observing from the sidelines.
Was there a certain type? Again, the women were 25 to 45, but was there a type of woman, if you were to describe, I'll give you an example. In Northern Virginia, and hi to all of you Northern Virginians, around the D.C. area, there is a look. There is definitely a look. And I could describe it to you. It's very sophisticated. It's well-dressed. It's well-groomed. There's a certain haircut. So, I mean, there are types. So are there types of Trump women?
Well, I think that the Trump woman actually is cross-type. But what we are seeing is one of the things that seems to be of interest to them is over-the-top expressions of patriotism and support for Trump. So they are not subtle right now. They may be subtle in their everyday lives, but in their support for Trump, they are not subtle. And that's part of that empowered, energized exuberance of freedom, we call it. They have a message to convey through how they are dressing. They have a message to convey through the tone and disposition they have at the rally. And so that is the type that we are tracking, sort of that the way they are using their attendance at rallies, their positions in the community to advocate for the president is unique. So are they sometimes perhaps more blue-collar? That seems to be a theme running through a lot of our research, that this is particularly an interest in the blue-collar community, people who may have identified as Democrat in the past, but for whom their values are now superseding that party affiliation, and in particular, their concern for Americanism is superseding anything that those conventional things in the past. So that's the type, really. Mama Bear seeking to defend the future of America for her children.
I'd be curious, Cecile Richards, in that clip we played earlier, talks about health care. And we do know that health care was a big issue in 2016, or 2018 for sure. That women are, you know, we still are the primary nurturers of our children. We think of their well-being and, of course, doctors and the accessibility of medicines and all of that. So did that come into play? Did anyone talk about health care, any concerns from the women that you talked to?
You know, it's very interesting because the good thing about our research is they're not reacting to questions from us. They're simply volunteering to us what President Trump has done that has made them supportive. And along the line, policies were mentioned. And believe it or not, healthcare was not mentioned. What was mentioned was jobs, economy, kids will go to college, increased hiring. So for these women, they're not volunteering. Healthcare is a main concern, or at least it didn't relate to what President Trump was necessarily doing. So they're much more focused on the economy. But economy and then the values that he represents. We did actually just do some research that we're working through on the same group of women who are negative about President Trump and their relationship to healthcare. And what we're finding there is that they are seeking the same peace of mind that these women have found through their relationship with President Trump through our healthcare solution. So everything that we hear women care about when it comes to healthcare, like reduced cost of care, affordable coverage, predictable fees, choice, all that comes together in them being able to have control and agency within that realm of healthcare policy. They want to be in control. They want to be the ones who are nurturing. They don't want the system to get in the way. So the reason I bring that up is because women do not have peace of mind who are not supporting Trump when it comes to healthcare. We then see in this study that women are finding peace of mind through something else, through their engagement with this brand that is fighting for all these policies. So there's an interesting bridge that can be bridged.
Yes. Yeah, there. Right. Yes, it's like it kind of reminds me of President Trump's a throw out to black Americans. What have you got to lose? You know,
right.
I'm going to help you. What have you got to lose? It's kind of like that kind of a bridge. So I was going to ask you, actually, and I think you just answered it. If you were planning on doing a survey of women who just cannot stand President Trump,
right.
who, and we know the themes, I've already recited them. So you are doing that.
We just finished it. Yes. Not published, but I'm willing to talk about it for your
audience. Okay. Well, yeah, no, I would love to hear just a little bit about it at least. So contrast the two, if you could. You just did on healthcare, but what else?
Well, so we looked at a couple different issues, and then we just looked, why this negative opinion about Trump? And you heard it in one of the clips you played. So it's the same old stuff, you know, sexist, racist, bully, childish, disrespectful, impulsive, volatile, hostile to the press. Okay, so all these things that we hear, what do they boil down to in our research? A conflict with their values at a very fundamental level. They did not feel that they could be a moral person and support him. That he brings instability to their world, that they do not feel a sense of connection, and they do not feel peace of mind because they don't have confidence that he's going to do his job well, and they don't have confidence that they can have pride in being an American anymore because he's diminishing that office. So it was very interesting to look at their mental map. What is really underlying it, I was likening it to someone who has been like spurned by their lover or something like that, because what they said to us, and we have a series of quotes, they said what they really think is they don't matter to the president. So they feel as though that connection has been broken and that they are not thought of, because when he is impulsive over and over, they feel that he cannot be thinking about what matters to them. So one of the interesting disconnects that they have, that these women who support President do not have, is that these women who are anti-Trump do not yet feel as ostracized by the culture as the women who support him do. And I think that's one of the hinge points. They still feel as though they can get, they could be respected by the culture and keep their same values. And these are conservative women who are anti-Trump, so they still feel that he is the way they are being disrespected. By their affiliation with him, they are being disrespected.
So it's also, so it's a safe place to be because they can be, they can live, survive in this culture partially by being anti-Trump, and that brings them peace of mind. It is interesting, though, and I don't know if I'm oversimplifying this. I'm not sure I can be objective, but it does seem to confirm what I said earlier, that that sounds like talking points. What you just said to me, their reasons sound like talking points.
Right.
If I watch MSNBC or CNN, that's what I pick up.
Right.
There's not much subtlety there.
Well, often the first level of what we hear in any study are going to be the talking points. You get a really clear view of what the media or culture, whatever their influence are, have given to them. So what I just rattled off to you are that first layer, use of Twitter, even not enough political experience. All those things are what they've heard. Well, then we push them. Why does it matter to you, for example, that he uses Twitter? Why are you saying that? And that's when we get to the real gold of our research.
Wow. We have to talk again, Anne. This is just very interesting. We'll put this study on our Facebook page and Segal Frontier Labs. Thanks for joining us. Sandy Rios.